سلام. من جواد قارایی.
I am Javad Qarayi, an Iran trotter.
I think Iran is a unique country, and I'm supposed to award you with the beauties of my beloved country and my trips to the most pristine places in Iran, a country I wholeheartedly feel proud of. Many people in the world consider Iran as a desert country because it's located on the dry belt of the earth. They don't have the right image of the beloved Iran. Undoubtedly, a major part of Iran consists of vast and, of course, impressively beautiful deserts, but the fact is about 55% of Iran consists of mountains, and we can see that Iran is a mountainous country where the Alborz and Zagros are the most remarkable mountain ranges in the unique country. Alborz mountain range is very crucial as it houses the gorgeous Mount Damavand and the 40 million year old Hyrcanian forests in the north. And the Zagros mountain range stands out in western Iran due to its dense oak forests as well as numerous rivers and waterfalls. This time, I've traveled to a part of the Zagros mountain range in Delfan in Lorestan province, a region that enjoys ancient culture and art besides its unique nature and is home to passionate people who speak in Lakhi. Oh, what a place. It's like a blade and has a low altitude. But I never take a risk. If I want to walk in the mountain and reach a point, I'll try to choose the easiest path, not the fastest or shortest one. Because when you're traveling in nature or climbing a mountain, the easiest way will save your life, but short paths can be dangerous. I'm sure I can pass through this path, although it is steep and there are thin layers of stone. Those places are a little risky, but I know that I can. When I'm not sure if I can pass or not, there's no way I'll take the risk and take that path. This place is good. The stones stick together like thin layers, and they've created a very beautiful shape. But at the same time, it involves a great deal of risk. Look how beautiful it is, and of course, dangerous. I have to be careful I don't slip. Oh, look at the other side. It's an abyss. But I trespass this tree's territory. I'll pass by it without causing any damage to it. Oh, it was a very steep path. This is Zagros, with many steep mountains and deep valleys. Oh God, what a scenery. I've seen many oak trees in Zagros in different provinces, but what makes the oak forest in Delfon in Lorestan province stand out is the color of its soil. It's red. The green trees and red soil have created astonishing scenery. I think this place is like paradise for photographers. In any moment of the day, in the morning, at noon, or at sunset, the beautiful nature of Delfon gives you a great scene from different angles as a gift. Thank God I managed to come here. It was worth it. In Persian literature, Zagros is a symbol of resistance and steadfastness by the people who live among the hard stones and have learned very well how to overcome their problems. The men and women in the Lor, Kurd, and Khashgai tribes work hard side by side in the Zagros Mountains from the northwest to the south of the beloved Iran in order to earn their daily sustenance. They've created many stories at the heart of the tough mountains. They've memorized every line of the stories and have passed them down from generation to generation. They've told many stories at the heart of Delfon since thousands of years ago. Some people say Delfon is a land that is under spell because many wars have broken out in this place along the tortuous paths, and as the locals say, the mysterious mountains in Delfon were considered by the people in the past as the best place to bury their valuables. And some local people believe that Noah's Ark landed in this region. But whether that claim is true or false, hearing them by the locals made the trip doubly interesting for me. For me, if there is a treasure in this place, it is undoubtedly the mesmerizing nature of Delfon, which has cast a spell on me with its beauty and had dragged me all the way here. Considering the archaeological discoveries in the Khatunban and Dasht-e-Kaveh areas, it is an established fact that the ancient residents of this breathtakingly nice region were among the first people in the world who tamed horses. Unearthing a device named bridle made by bronze in some of the ancient graves in this region proves the fact. But the interesting thing that's discovered in the graves is that the bridle of some of the horses were under the head of their owners in their burial place. A cemetery for horses has been discovered next to this ancient cemetery, which is adjacent to the cemetery where humans were buried. If the rider died before the horse would be buried in that cemetery next to the owner. The red hills of Delfon, along with the flowers, plants, and purple and oak trees, created the scenery in the spring that can be seen in few places in the beloved Iran. But besides all the beauty and the generosity of nature, seeing the traces of destruction of Mother Nature by people ached my heart. Oh my God, look how splendid this tree is. How old do you think this tree I'm honored to stand next to is? This tree is over 500 to 600 years old. In fact, oak is a tree characterized by longevity. It takes a very long time for it to grow this big. Unfortunately, there are no trees besides these two on the farm you see behind me. There was a time when this place was dotted with old oak trees.
Oh,
continue the trek toward Mount Mehrab, hoping the remaining oak trees in Zagros will be preserved. Zagros has abundant flora, and if we're a little lucky, we can see rarely found plants that not everyone gets the chance to see in their lifetime. And I was very lucky on this trip. This rare flower, and in fact this plant, is a member of the Kala Lily family. It is rarely found in Iran. It is mostly spotted in the western Zagros in scattered areas. In Farsi, this black, or I'd better say aboriginal flower, is called baharak, or spring, because it only blossoms in the spring. The flower has a very bad odor. The locals call the plant kalakak, or small raven. It has an eye-pleasing metallic color. If you touch it, it feels like a donkey's ear. It is thick and velvet, but the smell is a repellent. The very beautiful plant stinks because it draws the flies. Many flies sit on the plant. The smart plant attracts the flies so it can pollinate and survive the next generations. When we walk in nature or climb the mountain, we have to watch our steps so we won't harm the plants. This country is at risk of extinction because of mountain climbers. We might push a species into extinction just because of our careless attitude. It's very beautiful, but the smell is really a nuisance. It stinks. I have to immediately leave this place. Nature is a symbol of God's beauty and elegance. It's always beautiful one way or another in any shape it is, but mountains are always glorious within nature and have been especially attractive for nature lovers. Usually high individual mountains like Damavand or Sabalon are elegantly outstanding compared to mountain ranges. But here in Lorestan's Delfon, there are two mountain ranges, named the Greater and Lesser Mehrab mountain ranges, that are undoubtedly as gorgeous as individual mountains. U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza enters its 170th day, with the death toll from the war surpassing 32,200. Palestinian resistance fighters ambush an Israeli military vehicle north of the city of Tulkarm in the occupied West Bank, killing a number of soldiers. And Lebanon's Hezbollah fighters fire over 60 rockets at Israeli military targets after regime warplanes strike northeastern Lebanese city of Baalbek. Hello, everybody, and a very warm welcome to World News. Nearly 6 months into the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip and the regime's unrelenting bombardment and shelling continues to claim innocent lives of Palestinians. Several areas, including Jabalia in the north and Rafah to the south, have come under fresh aerial attacks. At least 30 people were killed in Israeli shelling as aid was being distributed in Gaza City. Bombing at a residential building also claimed several lives. In Deir Abala, the Gaza Health Ministry says 84 Palestinians lost their lives in Israeli strikes in a matter of 24 hours. Death toll from U.S.-backed genocide in Gaza since October the 7th has now surpassed 32,200, most of them women and children. Over 7,000 Palestinians are still unaccounted for and presumed buried under rubble. And over 74,500 Gazans have also been injured. Our correspondent, Moti Abu Musab, says Israeli forces are stepping up attacks in Gaza, leaving behind more civilian casualties.
The Israeli occupation forces continue to maintain their strikes and attacks against several areas of Gaza Strip, inflicting more destruction and death among the people and among the residential areas and buildings across all areas of Gaza Strip. Let's begin with Rafah City, whereas the Israeli occupation warplanes carried out several relentless airstrikes against the residential buildings, particularly in Al-Brazil neighborhood located in the eastern part of the city, whereas at least seven Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed, including women and children, while dozens are still trapped under the rubble of those destroyed houses. In the meantime, the Israeli military boats opened their gunfire towards the coastal area of Deir el-Balah city. When it comes to Khan Yunis city, the Israeli occupation forces also continue their strikes. Many belts of fire were carried out by the Israeli occupation forces against the western parts of the city and even the eastern part of the city, amid the heavy bombardment of the Israeli artillery that reached the east and the west and the center of the city. In the meantime, the Israeli special forces actually attempted to sneak out towards the surrounding areas of the Nasser Medical Complex. However, the Palestinians uncovered that special force and engaged in fierce clashes with it.
The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, on a visit to the doorstep of war-ravaged Gaza, has appealed for a ceasefire and the delivery of aid into the territory.
Nothing justifies the collective punishment of the Palestinian people. Now more than ever, it is time for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire. It is time to silence the guns. Palestinians in Gaza, children, women, men, remain stuck in a non-stop nightmare.
Guterres was speaking in a visit to Rafah, crossing on the Egypt-Palestine border. He described a long line of blockaded relief trucks on one side of the gates and starving Palestinians on the other, a moral outrage. The UN chief said choices between increasing aid or starvation. Guterres said the continuation of war will make the humanitarian situation worse. He also warned Israel against launching a ground offensive into the southern city of Rafah. The Gaza Strip is struggling with severe shortages of food, water, medicine, and fuel. Israel has blocked the entry of almost all essentials into the besieged territory since launching its genocidal war on October the 7th. Another Israeli soldier is killed in clashes with Palestinian resistance fighters inside Gaza. The Israeli military says 21-year-old staff sergeant was killed in central Gaza. His death brings the 252 number of Israeli soldiers killed in the besieged enclave since the regime began its ground invasion in November. Palestinian resistance groups, however, say the actual number is much higher. They say the regime is undercounting its losses out of fear of Israeli public anger. Hamas says it will not release captives held in Gaza without a commitment by the U.S. and Israel to end the genocide in the besieged territory.
Senior Hamas official Sami Abu Zuhri said U.S. and Israel are refusing to make that commitment, and this means they want the resumption of war, killing, and destruction. He cited Israel's rejection of a ceasefire plan by Hamas earlier this month. Under that proposal, Israel would have freed between 700 to 1,000 Palestinians in return for female, minor, elderly, and infirm captives. Israel has also rejected other Hamas demands, leading to a standstill in indirect ceasefire talks in Qatar. Those demands include Israel fully withdrawing its forces from Gaza and allowing displaced Palestinians to return to their homes in the northern part of the territory. Palestinian resistance fighters have ambushed an Israeli military vehicle north of the city of Tukaram in the occupied West Bank, killing a number of soldiers. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier with your details.
The fighters of the Tulkarim battalion, it's one of the branches of the Saraya al-Quds, the armed wing of the jihad movement, issued a statement, and the fighters were inside in the center of the refugee camp of Nur Shams. They issued a statement saying that their fighters had set an ambush at the gate of the village of Deir Ghsoun in Tulkarim, and that north of the city of the Tulkarim, and they had monitored the movement of Israeli soldiers there, and when a vehicle where an Israeli officer and at least three soldiers arrived there, they opened fire at them directly, and the vehicle has turned and they confirmed that they succeeded to kill everyone was inside the vehicle, and the fighters succeeded to withdrew after the vehicle had overturned. The Deir Ghsoun village, or the Deir Ghsoun gate, where the operation had taken place, is located in a border area northwest of Tulkarim. And it seems that the fighters succeeded to bypass the gate inside to the territories where the Israeli forces are.
The Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says it's carried out an operation against two Israeli military sites using over 60 rockets. Hezbollah said its new operation targeted Israel's missile and artillery base in Yoav and the Kala barracks in occupied Golan Heights. The movement said operation came in retaliation for Israel's earlier bombing of the Lebanese city of Baalbek and in support of Palestinians in Gaza. Now, the movement has been attacking Israeli positions since the regime began its genocide in Gaza. Meanwhile, Islamic Resistance in Iraq also announced a new anti-Israeli attack. It said the operation targeted the headquarters of regime's Ministry of Military Affairs with a drone. Russian President Vladimir Putin has denounced Friday's shooting at the capital, Moscow, as a bloody and barbaric terrorist attack. He said everyone behind this attack will be punished. At least 133 people were killed when gunmen attacked a packed concert venue on the Moscow outskirts. The city's governor says the death toll is expected to significantly rise. Marina Kortsanova has your story.
Russian President Vladimir Putin addressed the nation after the deadly attack in Moscow, which killed dozens of civilians. The president denounced the massacre as a bloody and barbaric terrorist attack, as he declared March 24 a National Day of Mourning. At least 11 suspects, including four perpetrators who directly participated in the shooting spree, have been arrested. The four direct perpetrators were detained in Bryansk region. According to the intelligence service, the terrorists planned to cross the Russian-Ukrainian border. The Russian president vowed to punish all involved in the massacre.
All the perpetrators, organizers, and customers of this crime will suffer fair and inevitable punishment, whoever they are, whoever guides them. I repeat, we will identify and punish everyone who stands behind the terrorists, who prepared this atrocity. this attack on Russia, on our people.
The Daesh Takfiri terror group claimed responsibility, but Moscow has dismissed the claim, asserting that investigation is still underway to ascertain the main culprits. Russia's security service says the Moscow attackers had contacts in Ukraine supporting them. During interrogation, a detained terrorist said he was promised 5,000 rubles to carry out the terrorist attack. He claimed he watched a certain preacher on Telegram, and allegedly his assistant contacted the man.
The perpetrators are ignorant, illiterate people who will commit any crime for money. The question is different. Where is the planning center? Not a single international organization can act in the international arena, especially in a state like Russia, where there are strong power structures. Performers can be found anywhere through the agents. We went through this experience in Chechnya. This once again convinces us that international terrorist structures are the work of the CIA and Western intelligence services.
The attack, which came amid Ukraine's war with Russia, was the deadliest in the country since the Beslan school siege in 2004. After Friday's attack, Putin held discussion with his Belarusian counterpart Alexander Lukashenko. Both leaders confirmed their readiness to work together in the fight against terrorism. In his address, President Putin said Moscow attackers were preparing to flee towards Ukraine, where a window had been prepared for them with the help of Ukraine. Now it remains to be seen how Russia is going to react to the massacre, which came in a very volatile region and amid its war against Ukraine. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Sirens have sounded throughout Kyiv as Russia has launched fresh airstrikes on the Ukrainian capital. Strikes prompted residents to seek shelter in subway stations. The Ukrainian army said its defense systems destroyed 18 Russian missiles and 25 drones. Officials said the attack caused only minor damage. Russia also launched strikes on Ukraine's western region of Lviv. The Polish armed forces say that one of the Russian cruise missiles briefly violated Polish airspace. Russia has been pounding Ukraine for days. It says strikes on retaliation for Ukrainian drone and artillery attacks on its border areas, including the region of Belgorod. The Russian President Vladimir Putin has suggested that the country may create a buffer zone in Kiev-controlled territories to stop these attacks. Austrians have once again rallied in the capital, Vienna, to call for a permanent ceasefire in Gaza nearly 6 months into U.S.-Israeli genocidal war. Protesters held signs and chanted slogans as they marched toward the city center. They called for an immediate end to Israeli massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. They also demanded the Israeli apartheid regime be dismantled. The rally was part of weekly demonstrations in solidarity with Palestinians. This week's demonstrations also coincided with the 10th anniversary of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions, or BDS, movement in the country. Organizers stressed the need to boycott Israeli products and companies that have collaborated with the regime during the Gaza war. Our Vienna correspondent was at the venue of the protest and spoke to some of the demonstrators.
So, to me, it's a moral obligation to boycott. It's a tool that works, that has proven that it can work, it can push countries, and that Israel needs this economic coverage, this diplomatic coverage, to continue doing what it's doing, and the human rights violation, and the genocide, and the apartheid. So I think it's a moral obligation. We should all be doing this for any cause that we consider that is violating human rights.
Yeah, well, I support BDS because I think it works. I mean, we have all these complicit companies here in Austria and worldwide, and they support the Israeli occupation, the Israeli apartheid, and the genocide which is currently happening in Gaza. And Israel is only able to continue its over 75 years of occupation and apartheid because institutions and operations worldwide support it. So we stand here and we support the BDS movement because we want to stop it.
We are joining this protest, the 10th Israeli Apartheid Week in Austria, as anti-colonial, anti-racist activists, because Palestine is in the center of the global South struggles for liberation, the struggles for the liberation against colonialism and imperialism. And it's important to support the BDS campaign and the Israel Apartheid Week because BDS has been consistently doing work in Austria for 10 years now. And it is the simplest thing that everyone who believes in humanity, who is human, should be doing. Just boycotting products that support genocide, calling for boycotts, also calling for sanctions and divestments on the state of Israel, which we are complicit in, which our government funds and supports politically.
We're here today at the protest organized by BDS Austria for the Israeli Apartheid Week 2024. We are here to support BDS Austria because Israel is a European settler state and it could not be possible, its existence could not be possible, and this genocide could not be possible without the material and moral support of the West. So it is our duty and responsibility in the West to hit the and to target the settler state of Israel where it hurts, here in the West, and its connection between our governments and the government of Israel. Austria is particularly guilty in this sense because Theodor Herzl was Austrian, so we in Austria have imminent and the most important duty to make sure that the people do not forget and the people know that there is a genocide going on, not only now, but for more than 75 years.
Thousands of Italians have held a torchlit procession in solidarity with Palestine in Rome. Italian capital and other cities throughout the country have been the scene of protests against Israeli atrocities against Palestinians in recent months. Max Civilli was there for us.
On Saturday, anti-war activists, local political parties' representatives, families and students joined a torchlight procession in support of Palestinians staged in Labaro, a residential area on the outskirts of Rome. The initiative was supported by a string of associations from civil society, including the National Association of Italian Partisans. The Italians have been very active in organizing pro-Palestine initiatives since Tel Aviv launched its genocidal war on Gaza. Hundreds of rallies and protests in solidarity with the besieged Gazans have been organized across the country over the past months.
It's unacceptable that our government is not doing anything to help the Palestinians. This is why we are here today. We want to speak out our outrage. We're that here in the suburbs of Rome. More than 30,000 people have been killed. We're standing before history without an answer for the ongoing onslaught in Gaza.
The Italian government has so far been a staunch supporter of the Israeli regime. However, Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has recently said that Rome is opposed to a ground incursion by Israeli forces into the Gaza Strip's southern city of Rafah. According to some estimates, the value of Italy's arms sales to Israel more than tripled in December 2023 compared with the same month in 2022. This is noteworthy that December last year was the peak of Israeli bombardments on the Gaza Strip.
Ours is a servile, subservient government, subservient to the Anglo-American axis. I regret to say that Italy is just a colony, and as we are a colony, also around, they are totally aligned with the Anglo-American axis's strategies.
We sang our World War II favorite resistance song because it unites everybody. All groups who have joined the rally tonight have put their differences aside because we all want the massacre of the Palestinians in Gaza to end, but also because we want peace in the world.
Earlier this week, the University of Turin suspended a collaboration agreement with Israeli universities and research institutes after a wave of student protests over Israel's brutal onslaught on Gaza. Max Civilli, Rome.
Thanks for joining in, and goodbye for now.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life. فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. And this is your host, Brother Mustafa. On this show, we discuss Islamic ethics and morality and what steps we can take towards reaching God, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. For example, we've discussed in these episodes, you know, utilizing our time wisely, understanding Tawheed, monotheism, reading the Holy Quran. And it's difficult, you know, to talk about this topic and not mention, for example, our behavior and our akhlaq and our manners and ethics towards other people. This is probably the most challenging, I would say, aspect of Islamic maybe spirituality. It is one of the most difficult things to deal with in our daily lives. And that is how we behave towards others. How is our akhlaq toward other people? Now, of course, being nice towards, you know, people that we like or who are friends and that like us, you know, that's pretty easy, right? For other believers that we get along with, you know, that is all very easy to do. But what we're really discussing is how do we deal with difficult people and difficult situations, right? How do we deal with, for example, people who may be rude to us? How do we deal with people who are swearing at us? What do we do, for example, when someone makes us angry? Islamic spirituality is all about controlling the way we behave towards others and how our manners and akhlaq is. If we don't control our behavior, if we're not, for example, positive and nice towards others, it can wash away all of our spirituality. It can destroy all of the hard work that we've done. Because this topic, you know, in Islam is the most important topic, I would say, when it comes to ethics. How many stories have we heard about how the Prophet's behavior was the best towards other people, that he would tolerate other people? I can give some examples from my own life. For example, I remember I started volunteering somewhere, you know, at a place for someone, and I was helping them, you know, with a project. And I remember a few times, you know, I was maybe late to reaching that event or to, you know, to that time that person had asked me to come. And, you know, this person became extremely, extremely rude towards me, right? He became extremely angry towards me. And of course, that impacted, you know, my motivation levels, how I would want to volunteer and help at this place. And, you know, this person has lost many volunteers and helpers because of his attitude and his, you know, way of behaving towards others, for his lack of tolerance. A person can be in a leadership position. However, if they're not, you know, nice towards other people, if they are not able to control their anger or if they're not able to tolerate, you'll automatically see them losing, you know, followers and volunteers that help them. So that's just one example of, you know, how our behavior can impact others. When we're at home, for example, you know, this is something that I had to probably learn the hard way, is, you know, controlling our anger, right? Controlling how we behave, for example, towards our brothers or sisters, our parents, our kids.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. Your love is all I need. So all I need. Your love is all I need. So all I need. Your love is all I need.
So back from the break, and we're speaking about, you know, how we behave towards others, tolerating others, controlling our anger. And these are things which will help us reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I should add, these are things which are a natural part of our life, right? It's a natural part of our life to deal with difficult people in difficult situations. The example that I wanted to bring from my own life is that, so I have kids, right? I have a son and a daughter, and they're young. And of course, kids, you know, what do? When they're playing, they also fight. And this is several years ago. This is before I started studying psychology. It's actually when I just started studying psychology, right? I would see that, for example, my kids would fight, and many times my son would, for example, you know, he would maybe hit his sister, you know, a little bit, and this would get a reaction out of me, right? I would go in and stop them from fighting. Sometimes I would get angry. Sometimes I would punish my son. I never hit our kids, you know, that's something that was a red line at that time. And one of the impacts that this had, you know, on our household is that it would, for example, ruin the mood or the atmosphere of the household if I would get angry and, you know, for example, punish my kids. One of the advices that a teacher of mine gave me is that when your kids are fighting, especially we're talking about young kids, the kids that are under the age of, you know, 8 or 7, instead of they're fighting, the best thing you can do is to ignore their fighting. Let them fight. And that was, you know, something that came as a shock to me. I was like, what do you mean? You know, should I just let my son, you know, hit my daughter? And he's like, you know, if it's nothing dangerous, if he's not doing it in a very dangerous manner, normally kids don't hit each other in a dangerous manner. He said, you can just ignore it. If there is a dangerous manner, then supervise it. But otherwise, ignore what you're doing. Because he said that when you become angry or aggressive, you're teaching anger and aggressiveness to your son. When you become angry, you know, you're creating this distance between you and your son. Not only that, you're making one child jealous over the other. So I started applying this piece of advice, and I saw, and you know, it changed the entire relationship that I have with my son, and it changed the entire mood of the house. No longer, you know, my son started respecting me more. We became closer friends. The kids would still sometimes fight, but then 2 minutes later, they would go back to playing, right? So the friendship among the brother and the sister increased as well. And this was only, how did this come about? This was a way, you know, it allowed, because I was tolerating behavior, I was controlling my anger. And this is advice which helps in many, many situations, is to really ignore or tolerate sometimes what others are doing, is to still be nice and respectful towards them. And since then, I've learned, for example, the red line that is, you know, that we should all have in our households is love and respect. Is to never break these red lines, no matter what happens. Is to always treat each other, especially among our family members, with love and respect, even if the other person may not be behaving well or making us, for example, angry. If we still maintain those red lines of respect and love, it's a way of maintaining our connection and our relationships. And this is significant when it comes to Islamic spirituality. God wants us to maintain our relationships with everyone, to maintain our relationships, you know, with respect and with love, so that He can maintain that relationship with us as well. And I don't necessarily need to jump into the many stories that we have of the people, for example, that will come and swear at the Prophet or at our imams. They, in turn, would be nice towards them. There's a popular story of a man, I believe, that came from Syria. You know, he traveled all the way, and I believe it was either Imam Hassan or Imam Hussein that he came, and he started swearing at him. He started swearing at Imam Ali and their parents. And the response from our imam was, he said, you know, brother, you look tired. You know, you've come from a journey. Would you like, you know, should I take you to our home? You know, maybe I can provide you with food or whatever you need. And, you know, this person, they say he kind of was shocked by such behavior, because he had been told that the imams are, you know, they're horrible people, you know, that they're not good people. That was the propaganda that he had been taught. But in return, our imam was nice to them. Islamic spirituality, it's about going through those difficulties, and it's about improving ourselves and making ourselves the best that we can. And when we become the best that we can, it's when we become closer and closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thank you so much for listening. Please pray for me and yourself to help improve our akhlaq and our manners and our ethics. Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM, 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza enters its 170th day, with the death toll from the war surpassing 32,200. Palestinian resistance fighters ambush an Israeli military vehicle north of the city of Tul Karm in the occupied West Bank, killing a number of soldiers. And Lebanon.